questions for her. And she requested I be present during that interview. There will be a waiver of the confidentiality privilege. And the perpetrator of that crime, the suspect, might very well be able to get the details of her interview as well as her home address. I don't think that's the law in Ohio.
In this case, why would you resist giving somebody that an outside firm, Anthem, is investigating in cooperation with you? I think it's fair to say that he sat in on all these meetings and we have all of the evidence of that. Why would you not want to give somebody who's charged with something the information? Is this a trial by ambush, or are we playing games or a secret? Why shouldn't I know what I'm charged with?
I think ultimately, if this went to either an injunction to prevent the unauthorized practice of medicine, if it went to an administrative proceeding, if there was an insurance fraud, criminal trial, of course they would have rights under Criminal Rule 16. But I think the real issue here is that we can't give this up. The medical board is under a duty of confidentiality.
Okay, that's a different issue than what you started with. That's a different issue. That's a statutory issue, and that brings in the waiver question. But my concern was, what's in these records that you don't want somebody that you're going after to see?
There might very well be patient-physician privilege material.
The court said redacted, didn't it?
Correct.
Okay.
There might very well be evidence concerning an uncharged suspect. There were also allegations here that possibly some of the doctors who had permitted Mr. Wallace to perform surgical procedures might very well be implicated in this.
And an uncharged suspect is a specific exemption on 149.43, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we don't have a problem with that, apparently. What is it you don't want him to see that isn't exempt?
I think we need to protect the integrity of the investigation, like any law enforcement investigation. At the appropriate time, under the appropriate circumstances, he might be permitted to see this. However, if we were to divulge the information prematurely, it might very well hamper any criminal investigation in the future. We're not the ones who would bring the criminal investigation. We might very well hamstring the prosecutor down the line when we make that pitch to the prosecutor to take the case. And if all of our information, our entire file has already been released, it might very well damage the case down the road.
The counsel, the U.S. government, the U.S. Attorney's Office, they operate with the open file procedure for a long time, and that seems to be very successful. In fact, it seems to promote a lot of early pleas. Joe filed, got a cold turkey, and the lawyer and client start figuring out to what's the best to arrangement we can get to a guilty plea. So the notion that a prosecutor might somehow turn down prosecution because information has already been divulged, but it doesn't seem to be very persuasive.
Well, you have to keep in mind that the point of the public records request was very early on in our investigation, and I think that there is a point at which the early release might very well jeopardize that investigation. However, I still believe, it's still our position, that the bottom line is that we are under a duty to protect the confidences, as the court has said in Craig, of several different categories of people. And the General Assembly has determined in both the Medical Board confidentiality statute and the Department of Insurance confidentiality statute that that's a duty that we need to uphold. It's not our ability to waive that. We don't have the right to release this early on in the investigation or late in the investigation. We're under a duty to keep that confidential. I think that's a very important distinction.
Isn't the issue here, first of all, whether or not these meet the definition of public records and the exception thereto for in criminal or investigatory records of this of the state. Isn't that the question?
The easiest way for me to understand this case, and yesterday we actually did sort of a little rip, is to look at it as almost a two-track argument. On one side, we have the medical board statute, which is this court has interpreted, creates a mandatory duty on the part of the medical board to keep their files confidential. The medical board has no right to waive that statute, and they didn't waive it. The presence of the third-party investigator who had his own right under his contract to review the records at issue, and who was also under an obligation to keep them confidential, that side. Then we have, I think, what your question is directed to, the Department of Insurance side. And it's our position that the General Assembly, in a valid exercise of their authority, has deemed these to be confidential law enforcement investigatory records. We don't need to go through the public records analysis. And even if we did apply a public records analysis, as this court has held it in Gannon, the standard for a waiver of that is the release of records. And there is no evidence in this file that we released any records to the Anthem investigator. The Anthem investigator, pursuant to his provider contract and his certificate of insurance, had the right to receive medical records, had the right to investigate this case upon his own merits.
Do we have to look at the waiver issue in light of the statutory with regard to the department? The statutory statute setting forth the by definition these meet the investigatory records criteria.
Correct.
Do we? How is waiver then implicated? Can you have waiver of records that are deemed to be investigatory records?
Well, of course, we are in position first that there's also a duty, much like the duty imposed on the medical board, there's also a duty on the Department of Insurance that would prohibit us from releasing records. And therefore, the same waiver analysis would apply. However, even if we do superimpose a public records analysis, we wouldn't necessarily admit it the appropriate way. But if we did, then the waiver analysis under 149.43 would center on whether any records were released. And in this case, no records were released. As I previously stated, I believe the easiest way to look at this case is on a two-track analysis, the first involving the medical board. The medical board, as this court has held, is under an absolute duty to keep the contents of their files confidential. That's to protect a wide variety of persons, physicians who might very well be under suspicion. I'm sorry, do I throw me off there for a second?
That's the last first time I've seen that happen.
Well, I figured that was random on me. There are physician-patients, which of course is the overriding obligation in this case, as this court has determined. That's the purpose behind both the physician-patient privilege and the medical board statute. This court is to protect the physician-patient relationship. Therefore, the medical board can waive in this case. And not only that, they didn't waive in this case. The Court of Appeals, in their opinion, they first found that the board didn't have a privacy right, and then within 10 lines of reaching that conclusion, concluded that they waived the privacy rights. The inconsistencies throughout the Court of Appeals opinion make it virtually impossible to implement.
The whole purpose of that statute, I think, that you're talking about, you say that the medical board cannot waive.
Correct.
They have no statutory authority to waive.
Correct.
The purpose of that would be to keep confidential information confidential. Wouldn't that be the purpose of the statute?
Correct.
Then why do they bring up in some outsider to sit and listen to it all? Outsider from the state, doesn't work for the state, isn't paid for by the state, paid for by an insurance company who is doing their own thing for whatever reason.
Doesn't that breach the confidentiality? I mean, maybe the department's guilty of breaching the statute.
The department, we would submit that the department did not breach their duty for several reasons. First, before I get to the why, is the fact that the Anthem investigator had his own independent responsibility and right to investigate any payments made to a medical provider under their contract. They also had the right to receive billing records, physician-patient records, under a limited waiver of that right.
Did he have a right to get those from the records generated by the insurance department and or the medical board?
I don't believe that he did, and the evidence...
But he was in the room and heard it all.
He may very well have, but he did not get any records from them. He didn't hear anything that he didn't already know, is our position.
But
he could have.
He was allowed in, and were there any restrictions placed upon what he could hear in the hearing?
No, there were not. But I think...
But does that really matter, or is the question... Is mere presence?
Well, I think that the Court of Appeals' conclusion was, is mere presence constitutes a waiver. However, the body of their opinion speaks of the information that he heard. And as far as the waiver issue goes, I don't think there is a distinction there.
We're not here on a breach of any, there's no issue here for breach of the privilege and damages therefrom. This privilege, as I understand it from our cases, actually is a privilege for the various persons, not the boards, not the department, not the medical board. So whether it's the only issue about this fellow being in there is the waiver issue, right? There's no damages, and your argument is that it can't be waived by the board.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
We don't have any claim here for damages, I take it, for the breach.
This is merely a mandamus action for public records, and it cannot be claimed by the board.
Extending that to its logical or maybe illogical conclusion, then during these interrogations, if the medical board cannot waive, then they could have anybody in the room.
I'm glad you asked that question.
They could go down the corner of Vine and Plum or whatever it is in Hamilton County here and find a homeless person and bring a homeless person in. They could sit in it too and there'd be no waiver.
If I could first, I see my time has expired. If I may answer your question.
Okay.
Report in the Akron Beacon Journal. The possibilities are endless there. However, I think what distinguishes here and what places the limit on and what we would ask for any holding from this court is that the person who was in the room had a right to investigate. That third person really wasn't a third person. That person was actually involved in his own investigation and was there not so we could help him, but so he could help us. And pursuant to his contract of insurance, he was also bound to keep what he learned confidential.
If he's bound to keep it confidential, how is he permitted to pitch in a year?
He's under a statutory obligation pursuant to 3999-42. All insurance companies in the state are under that obligation to enforce any suspicions of insurance fraud. So his presence, at least at some point in this case, was mandatory. He was under an obligation. And with that, I would conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Myers. Mr. Perez.
Chief Justice Blair, Justices of the Court. I'm Robert Martin Perez, and I represent Alvin Wallace, who owns a corporation by the name of Surgical Skills, who is a citizen of the state of Ohio, who has rights to be conferred upon him by the state legislature. His rights conferred upon him by the Ohio Constitution. He is here today. Section 149.43 sets forth a public policy. unholy playfits, big business, combining with state government to descend upon citizens of the state.
Well, you concede, don't you, that if Wilson was his name, wasn't it? Wilson, the insurance investigator?
Your Honor.
What was his name? Was it Wilson?
Mr. Wilson.
Is that the name?
Yes.
Okay. You concede, do you not, if Wilson was not in the room, you're not entitled to the records?
I concede that with regard to the medical records, that would be the case.
Okay.
We have to, and that, I suggest that we analyze this by the interests that are present before the court. In Kralik, it was a person who was complaining about a physician, and the physician tried to get the records of someone who lodged a complaint. Completely opposite in this case. We have Dr. Samarco, who used Alvin Wallace in surgery. Dr. Samarco was appalled at this behavior here and signed a release because he wanted to see what in the world was going on.
But this case, I mean, the reason we took this case is not the individuals or the motives of the folks at hand, but really we're just construing statutes and deciding bigger questions about waiver.
Precisely. Waiver, as well as judicial construction of the statute and policy behind 149.43, I turn your attention to Hiram Vice Code Section 1.11, that states the remedial statute should be construed broadly. If you look at 1.12, it says that any special provisions of that remedial statute shall control the grand general. I mean, this is a basic legislative...
Follow that through for us. What's that get for the plaintiff here?
149.43 is a remedial statute that controls...
Yeah. So what?
The Ohio Medical Records Act. And it controls as well the Department of Insurance statutes. So that even if there are some exclusions under the Medical Records Act, as well as the Department of Insurance Act, there must be construction pari materia with 149.43. And only when those other two statutes fall neatly under the exceptions of 149.43 is there a restriction of those documents, and those restrictions overcome the public policy of open government and the release of records.
When we, if the language of the statute is understandable and plain and not ambiguous, we don't resort to the statutes that dictate statutory construction. We do that for ambiguous statutes. These statutes, or at least as I read the exception here, for investigatory records, it's plain. It says that those are exempt from the public records disclosure requirement.
Your Honor, I believe that is not how the statute is written. 149.43 controls, and it controls over all public records. And unless there is an exception of 149.43, and the two statutes must be read concurrently, 149.43, the public policy behind it should advance the interests of public records and they should be disclosed. And I believe that if we all had our druthers, there would be complete integration of all statutes, because I'm sure that all of our jobs would be somewhat lighter. But I believe that it's incumbent upon the court to say what the law is, not to have an administrative agency state what the law is, to state that there are certain documents in their mind are not to be disclosed. That's the province of this court. It's the province of the Court of Common Pleas. It's the province of this branch of government. The legislature itself cannot set forth documents as being not subject, or therefore the legislature may not set forth, it does not set forth, that certain documents may not be available to the public. It says that certain classifications. Obviously, we're here on a limited record because of the failure of the state of Ohio and the administrative agency. agencies to answer questions at depositions with regard to their behavior. There is a statement here that there were no records given to Mr. Wilson, and I believe that the record here before this court is devoid of any support for that proposition. In fact, we do not know, sitting here today before this court, the extent of Mr. Wilson's involvement because of the stonewalling of the government agents.
The Court of Appeals opinion that we're reviewing didn't seem to, unless I'm not remembering, I don't think the court really dealt with the issue of Mr. Wilson and the waiver particularly. It seemed that the court took two stands, one that because there was a signed authorization of release by the physician, that should be looked at in camera, and secondly, there should be an in-camera inspection on other records based on deciding whether or not they fit within the statutory exception for investigations.
I believe that's precisely correct.
So the Court of Appeals didn't even get into the whole issue of Mr. Wilson and what his role was and what records he got, perhaps because the court wasn't asked to do that.
There's nothing in the record that would support finding one way or the other, unfortunately.
I'm asking, because why are we talking about it? I'm asking, I suppose, because I'm wondering why we are focusing on that aspect when it's not a part of the court's decision below.
Well, there was a finding that we once again talk about the interests of the parties in Dr. Smargo's room. And Dr. Smargo...
The interests of the parties didn't seem to be a focus of the legal question, the statutory construction issue that the Court of Appeals dealt with and that we, in turn, are dealing with today.
Excuse me, but it has to do with the waiver issue that you just asked about.
Okay.
Yeah, that's in the opinion.
Right. So, basically...
Here, when the medical board allowed Wilson, a private third party, to be present during interviews, it gave Wilson access to information that should have been confidential. For information gathered when Wilson was present, we hold. The medical board violated its duty to keep that information confidential. I have part of the same problem. I was going to ask you to straighten out the next part of the Court of Appeals opinion. We also hold that one of the doctors who was interviewed, the man you're talking about, Dr. John, waived his confidentiality privilege because he signed a form. Finally, we note Wallace, the person under investigation, had a privacy interest in the records. But because Wallace wants to obtain the records, his privacy are not issued. Then the next sentence, for the medical board's records pertain to all interviews except the Dr. John's, we hold those records should remain confidential.
That's correct, Your Honor. This case goes back to...
But they just said in the previous paragraph that it was all waived.
Well, I think it's waived with regard to the state medical board and the Department of Insurance. Those are the interests of that are waived in that room. Dr. Semmercedes is the one that signed the release, and Dr. Semmercedes has waived his rights. The Department of Insurance has an interest. There's no evidence that medical records were produced so that patients do not have an interest. And finally, the Department of Insurance was there, and they waived any rights of confidentiality they may have because under 149.43, we're basically talking about secret investigative techniques, which obviously are not secret.
Let me try it again. For information gathered when Wilson was present. Those words all, we know what they mean. We hold that the medical board violated its duty to keep that information confidential. Okay. And then they say, for the medical board's records pertaining to all interviews except the doctors, we hold those records should remain confidential. They've already said that the information has been breached.
There were investigations at numerous sites, Your Honor, and I think the Court of Appeals is explaining that without a written waiver by the physician, such as Dr. Semmercedes, there's not a complete waiver. So the Court of Appeals is directing the Common Pleas Court to look at the ones in which waiver occurred by the physician and not the other ones, the other three or four that occurred.
And
that's my understanding.
And there's no cross appeal. I mean, we're only dealing with the appeal here by the state. You haven't filed an appeal.
That's correct. Being outcome-oriented and attempting to get to the truth and the facts, we certainly were happy with the court's decision.
And the outcome is only those two things about in-camera inspection on two items. That's the Court of Appeals just said in-camera with regard to Dr. John
Zimmerstein.
Right.
As well as, I believe, the Department of Insurance, which is a completely different statute, in which I believe there's a general in-camera inspection to determine whether they follow our 149.3.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the bottom line on this is that these records should be open. Number one, there's no evidence that there was any real investigation in that there has never been an action taken. The Department of Insurance essentially closed its file. The Ohio State Medical Board's taken no action. And very candidly, Anthem has taken no. They haven't even attempted to get back the money that they claimed that they were owed.
Excuse me.
Trying to get the fly away from you.
In a related case, they didn't have any counterclaims for those funds. So the position of Mr. Wallace and Surgical Skills is that this is fundamentally a sham investigation. There are several statements of fact that I believe need to be corrected, and that is that there was never a misrepresentation on the part of Surgical Skills or Alan Wallace that they were physicians.
You said his position was that this is a sham investigation.
Your Honor, in construing the record in favor of Mr. Wallace and Surgical Skills, it was an attempt on the part of the Avenue Choice to essentially stifle activity that they didn't want to pay for. And they were paying for it. And then they decided not to pay for it with no legitimate contractual right to do so. So the investigators get the Department of Insurance, they all go running around to various surgeons and hospitals, and I submit to you that if you were a physician these days, and you had the Department of Insurance and the Ohio State Medical Board, which you know work together, show up in your office with one of your largest payors, that would have a very chilling effect on your choice to have to buy medical services. And it did, in fact, ruin.
So this is all about getting access to information for larger citizens.
We've already, Your Honor, we've been engaged in civil suit and received a summary judgment in the Court of Common Pleas for the First District for appeal. We ask that proceeding be stayed until Your Honor's to make a decision. And that was denied. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Perez. Mr. Meyer, you saved a minute of your time.
Glad I was not proceeding in the past as well.
I missed it.
Justice Cook, I think you've hit this case right on the head. This is really not about public records, it's not about this case is all about waiver. And it's been our position consistently through this that under the medical board statute, the medical board cannot waive their confidentiality and didn't. Under the Department of Insurance statute, they might be able to waive it, but they didn't. We won't exercise a review of the record again to rebut what's been said today. We need that to report. We would ask that the First District Court of Appeals opinion be reversed, that the mandatory duty of the Board and the Department to protect the confidence of their investigation be maintained, and that there not be a waiver when a necessary party who is under a co-permitted duty of confidentiality be present during this interview.
So in addition to the general objection you have to the Court of Appeals opinion, you specifically say they were wrong where they say, for information gathered when Wilson was present, we hold that the medical board violated its duty to keep that information confidential.
Are you asking me if I think that
will you agree with that statement?
That they breached a duty? No, we don't believe they did breach a duty. We believe
that they were using someone with specialized knowledge to assist them in their investigation, the same as a forensic pathologist would be used early on in a criminal investigation.
And you said you're willing to limit it to, so that the Akron Beacon Journal would not be in place of Wilson?
We, of course, would be willing.
How can we do that? How can we write a general postulate of law that says the duty to keep certain information confidential is breached when it's somebody other than somebody that we decide isn't?
Our appeals held that this was a necessary part to the investigation, but then also held that his presence breached. That was the position the Court of Appeals took, and I think that's a reasonable position. And we.
You think that's a reasonable position? Thought you.
I think to conclude that Mr. Wilson was a necessary party to the investigation is a reasonable conclusion. As you pointed out very well, I can't read the Court of Appeals opinion. I don't. It doesn't make any sense.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion.